The following KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Children's Theater, presenting the world premiere of The Giver, the story of a boy learning of the tragic sacrifices his community has made for safety and security. The Giver runs March 5th, 11th, and 12th, 2 p.m. at Keller Auditorium, 222 Southwest Clay. Tickets at 503-228-9571 or Ticketmaster.com. Appropriate for ages 10 and up. Information about The Giver at octc.org.
Allons dansons. Écoutez, répétez.
Well, I love cubism. It's my favorite style. When I see a cubist painting, I just gotta smile. But there's one painter I'm his biggest fan. He's the father of cubism. His name's Cézanne. Cézanne, the father of cubism. Well, some people say that it was Picasso. Other people claim it was the Chirico. Some people think it was Modigliani. But they're all crazy. It was Paul Cézanne.
Good morning. This is Julie Bernard and Art Focus. And I'm very excited this morning and grateful to Patty Warashina, who is in Portland again, and the Real Politic and Drunken Power series is happening at I have to find the name. I can't ever remember the name of the gallery because it's changed since in the last couple of years. And it is the Contemporary Crafts and Museum on Corbett Street. And that's where her work is now and has been here all of last month and before that for a while. So Portlanders should have had time to check this out. And you still have until March 12th to go to the gallery and take in this wonderful work. And we're also lucky to have the great ceramic artist, Patty Warashina, here at KABU this morning. And Patty comes to Portland from Seattle for the grand NCECA conference that's here now and brings ceramics people from all over the world to Portland. The National Council on Education for the Ceramic Arts, or NCECA, is celebrating its 40th year and will be convening here till March 8th. Galleries everywhere are showing the greatest of what's being done all over the U.S. of A. And there is some work from other countries, is there not?
Yes, there is.
And thank you, Patty, for taking the time. Clay-glazed steel is what you work with.
Mainly all ceramic, and then I mount them with steel armatures. You know, when they're put on a steel stand.
Okay. Well, we're going to hear more about that in just a minute, but I have some specific questions to ask you for a little while. We get into it. See if we can produce the spirit of the show here at KABU in this very small room. Can we do that?
Oh, we'll try.
I'm looking at you, and I think we can.
Yeah, between the two of us.
Yes. You are a ceramic artist who has done a lot of ceramics for quite a long time, haven't
yes,
you?
I started when I was 20, and I'm 65 now. So I guess that puts me into about what 40 years,
something like that. Yeah,
been in it for a long time.
Okay. And can you tell me how you came to conceive of the circus?
The Realpolitik?
Let's get into the mood of the thing,
right.
The Realpolitik.
Well, the exhibition that I have done at the Museum of Contemporary Crafts is was conceived because of my interest in the figure, but also I am an a real news junkie.
I can see that, yes.
And I'm very curious. I mean, I love reading newspapers. I subscribe to three. I won't even talk about that. But and I read them in the morning, and I read a lot of periodicals, like journals and stuff that I mean, it's an active interest with me. And it's not because I try to, but it's because I'm just, it's like clay. It's kind of addictive. And I think right now, especially because of some of the problems that we're having in the world today, which seem to be extraordinary, that it was kind of a natural way for my work to move. Because a lot of times when I work, my subject matter usually is very personal, about my personal life, could be my traveling. It's whatever kind of spontaneously hits me. And just recently, the world condition is so chaotic that it just seemed food for fodder. And so this piece that I do have down at the museum really is about politics.
Yes, it is. And to study it carefully, there's a sense of humor that comes along with the irony of some of these figures. Let's describe how it looks. How does it look when we first walk in? We see a group of figures, and we think perhaps they're life size. They're not life size, but they are
about three and a half, four feet. They vary in heights. And they stand above your head, and because they're on a 25-inch steel stand. So they're actually, I conceived of this, the whole idea, realpolitik, in that that term is kind of loosely being used because about it's something to do with national policy, using a national policy in the interest of the country that's using it. And so I decided that I kind of see what's happening in the world today kind of like a circus. And when I was a child, the big thing was to go to the circus. And I remember Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey, and there was another one that used to come to Spokane a lot when I was a little kid. Uh-huh. And I used to get so excited going. And before going into the three-ring circus, there used to be the sideshow. And, you know, you would have the fat woman, the woman with the mustache and the beard and et cetera. And I was really quite fascinated. And that always happened before we went into the main show. And so I kind of saw this this piece as looking at our world, at some of the problems. I'm not addressing all the problems, but just some of the problems that came to me at this point. I think were originally 10 or 11. And it's one of those things which could be added on to. And so I see this ring. It kind of represents the three-ring circus, but also I see these figures as being kind of like a sideshow. And center of the circle, there is a dog, a poodle, which is, you kind of equate with circus, jumping and playing tricks. And but actually, in reality, it's my own dog, Micro. Uh-huh. So I used him as the ringmaster, as an absurdity of what the grandmaster of this whole ring is about.
He's a poodle, and he's sitting up.
Uh-huh.
And he's very tall. He's right. a big poodle.
Yes, but in reality, he's only 6 pounds. but he has a big mind.
He has some identifying marks on him, doesn't he? He is the director of the show.
Yeah.
Does he carry a whip?
No, he's carrying a stick in his mouth. You know, he can see where he's kind of like crunching it in half. You know, so the baton is actually in his mouth.
And all in all, there are 9 figures in this show. Shall we spotlight some of those figures? And they stand on all around him in a circle, don't they?
Yes. Uh-huh. And originally, they were in a 15-foot circle.
They were in a what?
The radius of the circle was about 15 feet.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that kind of gives you the scale of it.
And it appears to be moving. The figures have a quality that causes them to dance in a circle. Mm-hmm. For me, mm-hmm. they appear to be about to move, mm-hmm. or they are moving, mm-hmm. and each one has its own identity, doesn't mm-hmm. it?
Yes.
Should we pick out some of the identity and some of the things that they're wearing that make them that make you know that they're political figures?
Uh-huh. Well, one of a lot of my concerns kind of is environmental, and in fact, yeah. I've recently noticed that when I look back on my work, that environmental issues have kind of crept in my work from early on. I just noticed that recently. But one figure in particular was a woman called Crow Whisper. And she is actually, if you look at her from a distance, she looks like a ballet dancer or like a circus act, circus performer. She has the orange kind of tutu. And if you look closely, get closer to her, her skirt, which is whirling around, is made to look like it's whirling around through paint or through glaze, and the way it's been painted is actually a pleated skirt, but it's actually a saw blade edge. And she, on the top of
a saw blade.
A saw blade yeah. edge on the edge of her skirt. So it's kind of got these kind of double implications. And on her head, there's a crow, and the crow is kind of looking up, and it's as though she's holding this branch in her arm, a branch that's leafless in her arm, and the branch is actually going into the saw blade. So you get the feeling that, you know, that this dead branch is being broken off or cut off, and then the bird on top of her head is his habitat. And then she has kind of from the front looks like ballet slippers, and in the back she has the cowboy
boots.
Boots.
Oh, spurs.
Spurs in the back. So, you know, there's all this kind of Texas kind of thing. So I like to cross-generate some of these ideas.
Yeah, and your figures all have identifying marks. That they identify problems is what they do, and the people are wearing them.
Yeah,
and like ornaments, which they are not really.
Right.
There's double meaning.
Always.
Always. And so a person can spend quite a lot of time and realize that you're coping with the problems of the world.
Or just,
with this symbolism.
Yeah, and just kind of addressing that these issues for me are there. I mean, I'm just kind of, there's not a solution, but it's just a recognition on my part that, and I'm not saying I'm a crusader or anything like that, but it's just a issue that comes through my mind.
It's a wild dance, isn't it?
Yeah.
The dance of life.
And I think, I think it's such a, for me, it's so, the issues are so big today that it seems like a very normal thing to work around these ideas.
It's
as an artist,
a great thing to be able to do is to project your cares about the situation of the world into symbolism that of figures wearing symbols and having a wild dance. It's amazing and wonderful that this can happen. And you too can get into it, listener, if you go there, because you are automatically taken into this dance as you view these figures. You're asked to join the dance, either with a critique or some kind of thinking. It is very demanding. This work is demanding of the viewer. Did you know that?
Well,
did you do that?
You know,
you do it for yourself.
Yeah,
I know.
But I've always felt that, you know, as an artist, there you really don't have to go very far for an idea. All you have to do is look in the world, your current world, and so there's millions of ideas just every day happening. So I guess that's kind of what my work's about.
Sure.
It's just kind of a reflection of what's kind of happening. Yeah. And, you know, my work changes from time to time, but right now this is kind of what's catching my eye.
Let's talk about a few more of these specific figures. Do you want to do that?
Sure.
Okay. You use black and white crows on one of your figures and on a stack on the head,
mm-hmm.
and it's a pregnant person, a pregnant woman, isn't it?
No, that one's not. But I do. It's on the dog. There's a stack of birds, crows.
Yeah.
And I use the. You know, I love the crow. I think the crows. I have crows. You know, in Seattle, there's flocks of them. And I've always liked the cockiness and the strength of the crow's body and the quality of the black body. They're sleek and they strut along, you know. And usually yeah. you think of birds as being very, you know, sweet and timid. But I love the character of the crow.
Crows are magnificent creatures.
Yeah, I love them.
They sit up in the tree. When I come out in the morning to get the newspaper, uh-huh. there's a crow every morning. It's up in the top of the tree and says, "That old broad is coming out for the paper again."
Yeah, I think
everybody, Crowland, yeah. there she is.
They're real characters.
Yeah, they are.
So I have an appreciation for the crow.
Yeah, I do too.
There's this really magnificent screen at the Seattle Art Museum. It's very famous.
Yeah.
And it's a Japanese shoji screen, and it's all gold gilded. It's quite large, and it's got these flocks of crows landing on this gold screen. So, you know, that's always been a very big image in my art experience, you know, when I've been to the museum, so uh-huh. also.
And all your figures do have something. Almost all of them are wearing something on their heads.
Yeah,
they have.
They're kind of like a balance
symbolic hats.
Yeah, yeah. And let's see. I think one of them might have been one called Heir Apparent, which is the woman who's all clothed in black. And that piece, she has a ball on her head. It's a red ball. And she's this circus figure, again, from a distance. And the ball really signifies, like, the hot sun, you know, like the glaring sun. And also the pollution that's covering her body, which makes her black. And she's carrying also a glass flask, which is, there's a very famous surrealist, Duchamp, who was a Dadaist artist, and he had this flask called Paris Air in his, and it was just an encapsulated glass flask of air. So she's carrying this kind of fresh air in her hand. So that's what the image is about.
Air from Paris.
Yeah, and air apparent is instead of H-E-I-R, it's A-I-R, air apparent. So the polluted sky.
The what?
The, you know, because I changed the double, it's a double meaning in the title. And instead of H-E-I-R, like the throne or royalty, heir apparent, it's A-I-R.
Oh, I see. The
apparent heir is black, you know.
Yeah.
So there's that kind of okay. double thing again.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk for a minute about some of the Drunken Power series,
uh-huh.
which is very amazing.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
And describe that.
Well, you know, being from a ceramic, I mean, I was really educated as a ceramic potter. I mean, early on, that's how I got into it. And it's hard uh-huh. for me to, like, let go of those utilitarian vessels images, even though I've kind of worked myself into a three-dimensional sculptural way of working in clay. And so that vessel is something that always stays with me. And I was making these. It's very well known around ceramic circles that you make these teapots. And yeah. you know, I decided to make teapots. And then I started thinking, you know, with this political thing happening in this world, that I would just make a tray instead of making a tea set. I would make a sake set. And call it Drunken Power Series. And all the images relate, the wine ewers would relate to these political situations. So they're just kind of like tableaus. The cups are, you turn them over, they're hollow, they're drinkable. The wine ewers are light, so you can pour out of them. So I wanted them to be used you know, you can use them because they're light the way I made them. Mm-hmm. And so they become landscapes for this political situation.
I see. Very, very interesting and well said. And what happens in your mind is fascinating. How you can turn something like, I was just thinking how clay and steel can become, it's taken from the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And through a conception like yours or conceptions like yours, it becomes a useful human thinking object. Mm-hmm. I mean, an object you can think about and feel about, and it becomes a human implement.
Uh-huh. Well, and
did
it's
I make
also,
myself clear?
Yeah, and I think there's something, you know,
abstract, but
about being able to use something, you know, and there's this kind of double meaning to that too. Yeah. You know, it's like using the idea of, you know, pouring, you know, wine ewer, which is sake, and to, you know, something usable and also political at the same time.
Sure. You have some figures. You have a figure that looks like Cheney.
Yeah.
Tell about
exactly.
That. What
well,
is that? I've forgotten which
particular,
one.
This particular tray.
It's a tray.
It's
yeah.
A, it's a tray with cups on it and two pouring ewers, two wine ewers. And one happens to be Cheney. And he is... his hand, the handle or the legs become the handle that you hold it by, and on his head, his one arm that is up in the air, stretched out, is actually the pouring spout, and on top of his head there's a can of oil, and so that becomes the lid. You can just use it as a handle for the lid. And then the other ewer is President Bush, and
yeah.
he is also. There's a little drop of oil on his head as a lid to pull out, and you can fill it. And then the wine comes out of his feet that are the legs that come up into the air. And so what I used on that was the tray became this kind of also like a tableau, and there is oil, a slick, it's called oil slick, and there's oil poured all over the tray. And also, then the cups are stacked, and they're oil barrels. So if you flip them over, on one side they look like an oil barrel. If you flip them over, they look like there's oil in them. So, but they become drinking vessels at the same time. And I think it's appropriate imagery just because I think this our whole concern, you know, right now is about oil.
Oh, sure.
And our political leaders are Cheney and Bush.
Yes.
And just it's timing.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's just that the time is...
What irony.
It is. I mean, it could have been somebody else, but it happens to be Cheney and Bush right now.
Okay. Have you ever actually served tea or served...
Sake.
Sake in these cups. Have you used these?
No.
Sat across from somebody?
No.
You
because,
couldn't really
no,
use
because,
them, could you?
Usually because I have them shipped out by that time. No.
They're gone.
Well, I mean, you ship them out to shows and things. So, no, I haven't yet. But I have other ones.
Okay. I need to identify the station. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. And we're speaking with Patty Hiroshina this morning. And she's a ceramic artist. And this is Julie Bernard and Art Focus that you're listening to this morning. Okay. Is humor making your bitterness more powerful, do you think?
Well, you know, I think there's
it's
a double...
Not exactly bitter.
No.
I don't like to say that.
I like to make my work, you know, approachable. And I like people to have one thing in mind when they come to my work and see my work. And then if you stand around long enough, then there's another edge to it. And I think there's there's kind of that fine line between, you know, they say in theater, between laughter and sorrow. And I think it, in a way I like that idea, that there's this kind of double-edged sword that you're always traveling on. But I like my work to be where people will want to come and look at it to see what it's about. I mean, in other words, superficially, you know, you kind of draw people in. And then when you're standing there, then they see things that are happening that aren't quite right. Okay. And I've always kind of used that irony in my work. And it's for them to find it.
Well, the fact that they're arranged in a circle and that they appear to be almost Cirque du Soleil at first, when you first view them as a group, they invite you to join them. They invite you to try to be part of the game, to understand them, to interact with them. Yes. You've been said to maintain a kind of surrealistic quality. Do you think that's true?
Oh, yeah.
The surrealism.
Early on, especially, my imagery really was based... I mean, I was a potter in the beginning, but also when I was working in pottery, my decorations were really drawn from people like Arshile Gorky. I was really interested in painting. And so I looked at a lot of works in painting, you know, and some of the surrealists. And so a lot of my work is really based from painting. And so that surrealist element, you know, was more prevalent early on. And now, you know, it's kind of taken a kind of personal view.
I read somewhere that you were heavily influenced by surrealism. Who said that?
Well, I think I've mentioned that. You know, like I loved Magritte, and especially Magritte. And I love Bosch, people like, you know, Bosch and Bruegel. And these, at least Bosch was like, to me, the ultimate surrealist.
Yes.
And so I have always, you know, admired those artists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like people like George Tooker, who are also social realists.
Yeah.
You know, and the way he worked and the kind of strange quality he had about the New York subways and the way he saw people in rooms and offices, you know, and working at these kind of tedious tasks and seeing society in a whole kind of surrealist light. But also it was very real.
Uh-huh.
And so I looked at those kind of people for my inspiration.
I know. That's why you're here this morning, because I think it's a different way of looking at life and portraying it. And I want to ask you what you're going to do in Portland now. What are you here for? You're here for the NECA.
NECA.
Are you going to do something?
Yeah, I will be giving the closing.
I see.
So okay. I was close to a lot of things. So no, I'm just kidding. Actually, I'm doing the closing lecture, and that's, I believe, on Saturday at 12 noon to 1. And then also there's I have a show that is over at the Contemporary Crafts Museum.
Yes.
So I'll probably show up for things for that. And yeah, there's plenty to do here.
Good. There sure is. And I'm glad you're here. And anyway, this show is going to be at the Contemporary Crafts Museum and Gallery through Sunday, March 12th. And Patty Woroshina is going to be there from time to time. Will you be delivering this talk, the finishing talk? Will that be delivered to the group of ceramics that's here?
Oh, yeah, it'll be the
ceramic
final.
That's here.
Yes.
Okay.
The final closing.
And I'd like to thank Wendy Miller, who is at the Contemporary Crafts Museum and Gallery, who put me on gave me some information about you and so forth, and was very helpful. I'd like to thank her. And I'd like to thank you very much for coming this morning.
Oh, my pleasure.
And we've been talking to Patty Hiroshima, and she is a ceramic artist of great import.
Well, thanks a lot. I don't know about that, but
your education your excitement to go to the Contemporary Crafts Museum and Gallery and take in that show.
Thanks
again for coming.
Okay, thank you, Julie.
And this is Julie Bernard and Art Focus.
The father of Cubism. When Paul Cézanne sat down to paint a flower or a face, he had to solve one problem, three-dimensional space. He said, form is content, his work is done. He was right. Now he's Paul Cézanne.
Cézanne, 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 the père de cubisme.
Oui, oui.
Hey, monsieur, get it.
Okay. Show your guitar.
And you're listening to the Thursday Morning Radio Zine for Thursday, March 9th at 11, Democracy Now! Actually, now, Democracy Now! And that, of course, was Julie Bernard.
The following KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Children's Theater, presenting the world premiere of The Giver, the story of a boy learning of the tragic sacrifices his community has made for safety and security. The Giver runs March 5th, 11th, and 12th, 2 p.m. at Keller Auditorium at 222 Southwest Clay. Tickets at 503-228-9571 or Ticketmaster.com. Appropriate for ages 10 and up. Information about The Giver available at octc.org.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now! Broadcasting from London.
We are mourning our dead by the minute, and the only solution, we see it clearly, and that's the withdrawal of all troops, immediate and full withdrawal of all foreign troops from Iraq.
Haifa, Zangana, bloodshed and chaos continue in Iraq as the threat of an all-out civil war looms. We'll speak with Haifa Zangana, an Iraqi-born novelist and artist, and a former prisoner of the Ba'ath regime. Then, the battle over civil liberties here in Britain.
I've been charged under a new law restricting protests in the vicinity of Parliament, which means that next week I could get up to a 3-month jail sentence.
We'll host a roundtable discussion with Milan Rai, author of 7-7, The London Bombings, Islam, and the Iraq War. He's the first person to be charged under new protest laws in Britain. Brian Barter, a British official who quit over immigration policy, and attorney Shami Chakrabarty, director of one of the leading human rights groups here in Britain. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Iraq, 50 employees from a Sunni-led private security firm have been kidnapped in Baghdad. The men were abducted during a daytime raid by gunmen wearing police commando uniforms issued by the Interior Ministry. A Shiite-led Interior Ministry has publicly denied it okayed the raid, but the Los Angeles Times reports sources in the ministry confirm the gunmen were, quote, commandos with the ministry's major crimes division. The mass kidnapping occurred less than a day after police found 18 bodies in a minibus in a Sunni area of Baghdad. All the men had been shot or strangled. Meanwhile, the Washington Post is reporting the leading Shiite party in Iraq's governing coalition has directed the health ministry to stop tabulating execution-style shootings in order to minimize the number of casualties caused by Shia militias and death squads. According to the paper, the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq ordered government hospitals and morgues to continue cataloging deaths caused by bombings or clashes with insurgents, but not by execution-style shootings. Meanwhile, the U.S. State Department has criticized the U.S.-backed Iraqi government in its annual report on the state of human rights around the world. Iraqi police units were accused of carrying out, quote, threats, intimidation, beatings, and suspension by the arms or legs, as well as reported use of electric drills and cords and the application of electric shocks. The report also strongly criticizes the state of human rights in Iran, Syria, North Korea, Venezuela, Zimbabwe, China, and Cuba, among other countries. The State Department report, however, is coming under criticism itself by human rights groups. William Schultz of Amnesty International said, quote, this report by the U.S. government...